Welcome to Star Trek Age of Discovery. I'm Adele Austin Anderson.
And I'm Gary Anderson.
And we're a married couple who are longtime fans of Star Trek. Today we're breaking down The Least Dangerous Game, the season 3 second episode of Star Trek Lower Decks. We'll conclude our podcast with the latest Star Trek news.
Yeah, all of the news.
But before we begin, please remember our analysis contains spoilers. So if you haven't yet watched the episode, you may want to do so before listening to our comments. Now, Gary, let's start off with the synopsis for The Least Dangerous Game.
Sure. The episode begins with two parallel plot lines focusing on Boimler and Mariner. As the Cerritos is in orbit above the planet Dulaine, the episode begins with our four lower deckers playing an interactive game of batleths and behunks based on Klingon war traditions. The game features a virtual representation of the famed Klingon Chancellor Martok, who serves as the game master. Mariner gets called away early from the game by Commander Ransom, who she feels has been extremely strict taskmaster on her. She thinks he intentionally wants her to screw up and be dismissed from Starfleet service.
Boimler becomes upset when informed a former Cerritos ensign named Vendom had recently been named captain of the USS Inglewood. Tendi suggests Boimler follows Vendom's strategy to quick promotions by becoming more of a risk taker, willing to accept new experiences to deepen relationships and expand his experiences and skill set.
This strategy seems to work as Boimler agrees to trying out new activities, which lead to enhancing his relationships amongst crew members. However, Tendi thinks he's gone too far when he accepts a dangerous challenge from an alien named Cranch to serve as prey for his hunt. Yet Boimler is unwilling to back down as he initially believes it's just a game, with no real threats to his safety. The ensign soon finds out from Cranch he's mistaken as the alien uses real weapons and aggressively chases him throughout the ship.
Boimler seeks advice from the virtual Martok, who tells him he has to stand his ground with Cranch. The ensign bravely does so, but is quickly speared in the shoulder, lying helplessly on the floor. Boimler fears for his life, but Cranch spares him, saying his people practice catch and release of their prey.
Concerning the other storyline, Chief Engineer Billups and Rutherford meet up with Ransom and Mariner in an orbital lift they are supposed to repair. However, instead of having the engineers take on that job, Ransom assigns Billups and Rutherford to carrying out diplomatic duties on the planet, while he and Mariner repair the lift.
Mariner suggests it would be a better deployment of personnel if their duties were reassigned to more appropriately fit their abilities. However, although inept to repair the lift, Ransom refuses to change his mind as he believes their assignment will cause the ensign to circumvent his orders, leading to an insubordination charge.
On Dulaine, Billups and Rutherford initially enjoy their assignment with the scantily clad white-haired Dulaneans, who greet visitors with kisses. However, the situation turns to the worse when Billups offends the native people's sensibilities because his navel is an outie. Their diplomatic mission deteriorates rapidly as their lives become endangered. When Ransom seems not to understand the seriousness of the situation, Mariner decides to go rogue yet again to help her colleagues. To reach the planet's surface, she dons a skydiving suit and jumps off the orbital platform. Along the way, Ransom contacts her to let her know he's had a change of heart and thinks they should go down to Dulaine together to assist Rutherford and Billups.
Not wanting an insubordination charge, Mariner has to climb up an untold number of stairs to reach the top of the orbital platform. Although exhausted, She skydives once again to the planet's surface, this time with Ransom. There they find the natives ready to sacrifice Rutherford and Billups to an active volcano. However, Ransom is able to assuage the situation, saving the lives of their colleagues.
Back on the Cerritos, Mariner commends Ransom and admits she wants to do well so she can remain in Starfleet. In another scene, Boimler tells his friends that he will continue to be more accepting of new challenges and experiences in the future.
Yay.
Yeah, so things change.
Things change.
People actually grow.
Right.
They
right.
learn.
Right.
What an
it's
amazing.
It's possible.
It's possible in a 25-minute cartoon.
That's right. So let's go to the credits. The Least Dangerous Game was written by Garrick Bernard and directed by Michael Mullen. Bernard has been a staff writer and story editor on Lower Decks since the show's beginning. Currently, he is an executive story editor. Bernard has written two other episodes, Where Pleasant Fountains Lie and Veritas. Bernard has also written for Solar Opposites, another Mike McMahon animated comedy series on Hulu. In his free time, Bernard also acts. Earlier this year, he was a series regular in the freeform comedy Single Drunk Female.
Yeah, supposedly he had a pretty significant role in there.
All right.
Yeah. Mike Mullen has been a director, writer, and storyboard artist for a host of animated series, including Star vs. the Forces of Evil and various Kung Fu Panda series, as well as Trash Truck. Early in his career, Mullen was amongst the team of animators who brought to life the Iron Giant. This is his first Lower Decks credit, though.
All right. So let's jump into the analysis. In The Least Dangerous Game, an away mission to the tropical paradise planet of Delane turns into an opportunity to correct bad decisions. While aboard the Cerritos, Boimler makes a bold career strategic choice that comes with unexpected consequences.
The theme of this week's episode is reversal. Many people are invested in being right all the time, whether that's true or not. For them, changing their mind can be seen as a sign of weakness. In this episode, however, Ransom, Mariner, and Boimler are given an opportunity to reverse previous decisions. That offers each of them the opportunity to learn something new about themselves and how they can function in the world.
So let's say at the outset, The Least Dangerous Game was a much better episode in every way from the last week's. The jokes were funnier, the Easter eggs and other references were actually connected to the story. Tendi and Boimler shared more screen time together, just the two of them, than more than they ever have. Usually, when the four Lower Deck ensigns pair up, it's Tendi and Rutherford, Mariner and Boimler. But more importantly, we saw our characters wrestling with the ramifications of their actions and choosing to try something new. There was even some character growth.
Building upon Captain Freeman's decision from last episode, we get to see how well Ensign Mariner is faring under the disciplinary orders. This is her last chance, basically. The captain's daughter has been assigned to First Officer Commander Ransom. He says jump, she says how high. If Mariner is insubordinate to Ransom or he finds her defying his orders, that's it. No reassignment to another department on the Cerritos. No transfer to her father's ship. She's out of Starfleet. At the very least, Mariner would not be assigned to another starship. So let's now look at Ransom, Mariner, and Boimler as examples of what was so good about The Least Dangerous Game.
So here's Mariner. It quickly becomes apparent that Mariner and Commander Ransom are the wrong people to deal with repairing the orbital lift. However, Ransom refuses to change his orders for fear it would prove that she was right and he was wrong. But when she hears that Rutherford and Billups have offended the Dulanians, leading to their death, their possible death by a volcano god. As usual, Mariner decides to handle things herself. She puts on a jumpsuit and dives toward the planet's surface. But when Ransom expresses that she was right, he reverses himself. Mariner takes great pains to climb back up to the lift platform level to meet him.
I don't think it was the fear of punishment that convinced Mariner to stop being insubordinate and support her superior officer. She's arrogant. Mariner thinks she knows better than everyone else all the time. It's the cause of so many of her run-ins with her mother. This time, however, she chooses to work with Ransom instead of against him. Mariner shows a capacity to let Ransom be right. Later on, when she compliments him on how he handled the Delalians, he thinks she's just buttering him up. He rejects it. Ransom often behaves like a lunkheaded frat boy, and he misses an opportunity to accept what she was saying.
All right.
So this seems as if they're going to have to go through that yet again before they finally figure things out.
That's right. That's right. That they're actually working together.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Now let's turn to Boimler. When Boimler finds out former Ensign Vendom had recently been promoted to captain of his own starship, he can't understand how Vendom could have succeeded where Boimler had failed. Teddy suggests it was Vendom's willingness to say yes to new experiences and opportunities. Boimler translates this into saying yes to everything, since he's well known for not being a risk taker. His new approach to life gets him invited to participate in a spring ball game that gets him injured, but leads him to joining Shaq's choir singing Bajoran dirges. This earns Boimler an opportunity to ask Shaq for a favor. Finally, he accepts the invitation of Cranch, a chrome sapioid, who asks him to participate in a Venerix hunt where Boimler is the prey. Although he does ask for help from Captain Freeman, spoiler alert, she doesn't give him any, Boimler gains a lot of confidence in himself after the hunt. He also earns the respect of Cranch, who offers to praise him to Captain Freeman. In the end, he comes out on top for all three of these situations in which he would have previously declined.
Sure. Now, let's move on to the third person, Ransom. At the beginning of season two, Commander Ransom developed a justifiable animosity towards Mariner. She had a carte blanche agreement with her mother that allowed her to do whatever she felt she needed to do, regardless of the chain of command. Mariner's actions were actually outside of the chain of command, and Ransom took that personally. His resentment towards her continues to linger even in season three. And Ransom, as we know, is just as arrogant as Mariner, as we said earlier. So it was a risk for Captain Freeman to put him in charge of Mariner. Their personalities don't necessarily mix well.
When Mariner suggests they tackle the diplomatic duties on the away mission and let Billups and Rutherford fix the orbital lift, Ransom decides to do the opposite. He and Mariner will attempt to do the repairs while sending the engineers down to Delane to represent Starfleet and have a good time. It doesn't even sound right, and she can see that. But Ransom is also stubborn. It comes as no surprise when both teams fail at their respective tasks. Ransom sticks with his decision even after it's evident it's not working. Billups and Rutherford begin to have problems misinterpreting cultural cues that could damage ongoing relationships with the planet. Likewise, Ransom and Mariner's repairs are ineffective and could lead to making things worse. As we said before, Ransom can be clueless. But despite that, he finally accepts the logic and acknowledges that Mariner was right.
The actions of Boimler, but especially Mariner and Ransom, exemplify real growth. Now let's see if the writers let them retain it throughout the remaining eight episodes.
Yeah. So, Gary, let's now talk about our bits and pieces.
Okay. All right.
So I'm going to start with what governs your planet. This episode gave a smorgasbord of governing methods by which Star Trek planets, especially in the original series, find themselves getting in trouble. If you watch the original series episodes, you'll be familiar with the three branches of governance on Delane: a telepathic baby that you saw in the Corbinite maneuver, a volcano god, which was in the episode The Apple, and an evil computer, which was seen in a number of episodes like The Apple, The Return of the Archons, and The Children Shall Lead, and also For the World is Hollow and I Have Touched the Sky.
Yeah, that was the ongoing, reoccurring theme, that if you were on a planet and the planet was
controlled
by a computer, then things weren't going to end up right.
No, not at all.
Right. Also, let's go back and talk about one of the things that we know Star Trek and Paramount have been notorious for, and that is merchandising the experience.
Right.
Going all the way back to the original series, they tried to find ways to creating toys and other merchandise that you could get fans to buy.
Yeah, it's another revenue stream.
Right. So here we have, in this episode, a little evidence of that. Batliffs and Bahunks, the game that the Lower Deck crew are playing at the very beginning of the episode, is a Klingon version of Dungeons and Dragons. The game is also a parody of a real-life Star Trek The Next Generation interactive board game from 1993. In that version of the game, it came with a VHS tape. You may not remember what a VHS
tape is. Yeah. We know how old you are if you actually know what a VHS tape is.
Right. And the tape had the performance of actor Robert O'Reilly, who played Gowron on both Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. Here, however, he played another warmonging Klingon warrior called Kavak. In the game's narrative, Kavak had hijacked the Enterprise. And throughout the game, he gives the instructions to the players on what each one of them must do to move things forward. So pretty much exactly what Martok is doing in the game that we see on screen.
All right. And then we have Krench, that according to Tawny Newsome, the name Krench is a mashup of ketchup and ranch.
Yeah, she said that at the Las Vegas 56-year mission convention. She said that she finally got Mike McMahon to admit that's what he had done. He had taken ketchup and ranch and put them together and created the name Krench.
So, Gary, let's move to our choice of Easter eggs to highlight from this week's episode.
Sure. Now, mine is actually not so Star Trek related, but it's related to this episode. I'm going to take the title of the episode, which is The Least Dangerous Game.
Okay.
The title actually comes from a parody of a short story called The Most Dangerous Game that's basically premises the B plot that Boimler was involved in. The Most Dangerous Game was written by Richard Connell and published in 1924. It tells the story of a big game hunter named Sanger Rainsford, who falls off a yacht during a storm on the high seas. He washes up on the shore of an isolated island in the Caribbean and discovers that is actually a refuge of this Russian aristocrat called General Zaroff. He, too, loves to hunt, but the sport has lost its excitement, and so provided with people who have washed ashore at his island, Zaroff chooses to hunt humans as his prey. And in this case, Rainsford becomes his new prey so that he can recapture the thrill of the hunt. Games has been called one of the most popular short stories ever written in English. And it's been adapted for film, radio, television, and other media. There are two film versions of the story, one from 1932 starring Joel McRae, and a second, a more recent version that came out in 2020. There are three famous radio dramas based on the short story. The first in 1943 starring a young Orson Welles, another 2 years later starring Joseph Cotton, and a third in 1949, starring Basil Rathbone and Rex Harrison. TV writers have also adapted the plot into numerous hours of television, ranging from the comical take in shows like Gilligan's Island, Get Smart, and even The Simpsons, to more dramatic turns that we've seen in episodes like of Supernatural, Criminal Minds, and Law & Order SVU. Even Marvel Comics' Stan Lee was inspired by the story when he and Steve Ditko created the Spider-Man villain, Kraven the Hunter. Finally, there is a Star Trek connection to The Most Dangerous Game. In season one, the Deep Space Nine episode Captive Pursuit introduced the prey species of T'Kosk and the Hunters of the Gamma Quadrant. These two species were inspired by the story, according to showrunner Ira Stephen Baer. Also, there's an obvious influence from The Most Dangerous Game on the development of the Delta Quadrant species, the Horosians, who you see hunting as a sport, and they are willing to take any aliens they run into and turn them into prey for them to capture and kill.
Well, let's turn to my Easter egg.
Yes.
Okay. The Delanians featured in this week's episode seem to have characteristics similar to the Valians first introduced to us in the original series episode, The Apple. We also find characteristics of the Edo people first seen in the Next Generation episode, Justice.
Yeah, Justice. Keep off the grass.
Okay, the Valians had a reddish skin tone and with white hair that looked like it had been heavily teased. The bare-chested men wore tight white pants while the women were scantily clad. They were enslaved by a sentient computer, which, like the one on Delane, required offerings to a volcano which it inhabited. In contrast to the Valians, the Edo people are blonde and sexually uninhibited. Both men and women wore minimal clothing and were open to engaging in sexual activities among themselves and visitors. However, I would not advise our listeners to take the time to watch either of these episodes. Both are hampered by weak narratives, stereotypical characterizations, and low production values.
Oh, I don't know. I think that giant volcano god is kind of that took them quite a while to make in 1966.
Okay, so Gary is being facetious.
Yeah.
So
I will say Justice is a waste of time.
Both a waste of time.
I mean,
they're both a waste of time.
It's just
awful.
It's just awful. It's just awful.
From the first season of the Next Generation.
This is why I don't understand people's revisionist history on Next Generation.
Right.
The first two seasons have a few good episodes.
Yeah.
But the majority of both those seasons is just crap.
Yep.
It is.
Yep.
And
as I had said before, after watching the first few episodes of The Next Generation, as big of a Star Trek fan as I am, I could not, I just stopped watching the show, and it wasn't until a work colleague of mine, you know, when it got into the second year.
No, the third year, that's what it was.
Well,
that's
I'm talking
when we
about,
started dating.
No.
Yeah.
Gary.
Okay.
I'm talking about my experience.
Okay.
That it was.
Without me.
Without you.
Right.
In the second year.
Okay.
This colleague of mine said, oh, you should start watching it. It really has gotten better. Well, it wasn't that good, but
it was a smidge better.
That's when I started watching the show again, was the second season.
The real transformation starts in season three.
Yeah. Well, let's go with Star Trek news.
Okay, let's move on to Star Trek news. There is some soundtrack news, actually. The Star Trek Discovery Season 4 soundtrack is now available through Lakeshore Records. The 32-track Discovery Season 4 soundtrack includes music from all 13 episodes of the latest season, along with the special inclusion of Annabelle Wallace's cover of the classic song Stormy Weather.
All right.
From the episode so titled.
Yep. And we also want to give you another reminder for Star Trek Day, which is going to happen in a couple of days. So
Thursday, yep, September 8th.
Right. We will celebrate Star Trek Day on September 8th by means of a live global streaming event. It will be filled with celebrity panels, entertainment, and much more. This will be the third year in a row for such an event in honor of the premiere of Star Trek, the show that started it all 56 years ago. The events will include
red carpet interviews conducted by Jackie Cox from RuPaul's Drag Race and Mary Chifo of Star Trek Discovery. Fred Tesoccuri of Star Trek Lower Decks, he plays Chax, will serve as the event's announcers.
Panel interviews will be hosted by Tawny Newsom and Paul F. Tompkins of Star Trek Lower Decks and the podcast Star Trek The Pod Directive.
Next, we want to talk about the panels. Star Trek Picard panel will kick off the series with, including now, Patrick Stewart, and along with Jeri Ryan and Michelle Hurd, who had already been announced to participate. As well as the Star Trek Lower Decks session will include voice cast members Tawny Newsom, Noelle Wells, and I'm assuming Fred Tesoccuri will also be part of it since he's there already.
Okay. Star Trek Prodigy panel will include voice cast actors Brett Gray and Kate Mulgrew.
And then the Star Trek Strange New World session will include series stars Rebecca Romijn, Jess Bush, Christina Chung, Celia Rose Gooding, Melissa Nieva, and Babs Olasamukin.
There will be a Nichelle Nichols tribute.
And appearances will include Sonequa Martin-Green from Discovery and other surprise guests.
Yeah, that's just a catch-all for it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, they don't know who else is going to be there. Right, exactly.
There will also be a behind-the-scenes set tour of Star Trek Discovery with Wilson Cruz.
And then we'll have a segment of The Ready Room with Will Wheaton.
There'll be Star Trek cosplay and a runway of that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And music will be conducted by Reggie Watts. And if you don't know who that is, that's the band leader for The Late Late Show with James Corden.
There'll also be stand-up comedy by Brian Posehn.
Who?
I have no idea who that is.
Star Trek Day starts at 12 p.m. Pacific Time and 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And it'll kick off with live from the Star Trek Day red carpet with co-hosts Cox and Chifo, interviewing the various Star Trek cast members, past and present. For more details, including the specific events and competitions, as well as how you may enter them, go to trekmovie.com.
So in closing, we'll be back next week with our review of the season 3, episode 3 of Star Trek Lower Decks, entitled Minding the Mind's Minds.
Mm.
Before we sign off, we would like to remind you to share a link of Age of Discovery with people you know who enjoy Star Trek as well. Until that time,
like, subscribe, and follow Star Trek Age of Discovery on Twitter and Instagram at Star Trek AOD, on our Facebook page at facebook.com/StarTrekAOD, and at our website, StarTrekAOD.net, where we offer additional articles on Star Trek canon, interesting sidebar issues, and other aspects of the show. Also, email the show at StarTrekAOD@gmail.com. But until then,
live long and prosper.